Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Fire, Ice and Fire book club. I'm a little, frazzled because we're not talking about the book. We're talking about House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 1. Matt, before we jump in the episode, the moment everyone's been waiting for, I got to ask you something. Do you have any rituals when it comes to watching the show? Like, is there a certain food you eat? Or?
Ooh, yeah. Let's see. I busted out. I bought this House of the Dragon wine, last, I think it was like last summer or something. I think it's just like, it's just got the House of the Dragon logo on it. It wasn't particularly amazing or anything. But did that. And just watched the episode. Just was ready to see what was happening, man. But let me just get this out of the way, because I'd start this off at the beginning of every season. My quick little, perhaps maybe I'll get another New York Times quote review. Okay, the king of must-see TV is back. House of Dragon, yeah. Man, it's back. I'm back to every week. There's other shows that are out this summer, but none of them are going to come close. And I think you can tell that right from episode one.
Yeah, it certainly feels like an event, especially with a big inflatable dragon being on a building in New York City today. Folks, I'll tell you what, we're doing a follow up episode later this week where you're going to be able to send in your thoughts and questions or whatever about the episode. But also include if you have any rituals. We'd love to hear what rituals you have whenever Westeros TV is back on and what you do with, whoever you're watching. So I am definitely one of these people. I eat Indian food. That's kind of what we do. We order Indian food and turn all the lights down so we can really get have a nice OLED TV. And let's just start out with the intro. The new intro, I actually like it more than the one from last season.
Oh, it's definitely better. Yeah, I like it more. Still don't like it as much. And just based off what we were told about it, I was like, I think it's going to kind of remind me a little bit of like Wheel of Time's intro. It's kind of similar. Wheel of Time has like threads moving and it's kind of
weaving.
Like,
weaving.
Yeah, that's more of a Wheel of Time thing. And even Rings of Power has like the sands, kind of thing. So I very like it very much. I'm excited to see that. I definitely agree that it's the second, best of the,
Game of Thrones original, definitely still the best, but yeah. I like this more than season one House of the Dragon opening. I feel like it has a little bit more vibrancy to it. Like there's just more going on there. Also kind of a nod to Helena, cause she, has been knitting and sewing and other things. I don't think she'll be doing any of those things anymore. Maybe not. Who knows?
Maybe not. We'll see.
One prediction, we got a couple of predictions, right, that we said about season two we've been making for years. But the first one I got to say is I was absolutely on the money. I said we'd open up coming over a hill in a flight. I did say it was going to be a dragon. It wasn't a dragon, but to Winterfell.
Raven.
It was a raven. Dark wings, dark words. Yeah. And I was right. We opened up in Winterfell. And I got to tell you, Matt, I got a little bit emotional. I got a little choked up.
As soon as you know, because the episode's starting and I'm like, all right, you know, getting like, I'm eating some pizza, getting some stuff, you know, now we have a baby there. I'm watching. Teresa's like, I'm going to man everything. You just watch. And so I'm like, all right, settling in. And as soon as I heard that, like the first note, I was like, Winterfell. Yep. Mm-hmm. As soon as I heard it, because that's like the Starks theme, you know, it's everything. So, yeah, it was cool to see we didn't really see that much of Winterfell. We just got, you know, the shot of it. And then we got a little bit of the wall. We got Craegan Stark, who's going to be, you know,
had a northern
really
accent.
The key to this whole thing, man. He does have a northern accent. I will say, I don't have that many negatives of this episode. In fact, I already can say I would give this episode 4 out of 5 stars. That's how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to do out of 10. You know, I've said that. I think 4 out of 5 stars for me. It was very good. There were a couple things I could nitpick, you know, because we try to give the negatives as well of the things we didn't like. One of the things that kind of took me out of it just a little bit was the audio. When Craegan Stark and Jacaerys are walking on the wall, it like if you go watch the scenes of Game of Thrones, there's much more wind, there's much more stuff going on, like there's more ambient noise. It was like I feel like they're in a sound booth.
I actually agree with you, and I was going to bring this up because
it was first... like it kind of took me out of it just a little bit, and I was like, because it felt a little weird.
Yeah, at first I actually thought it was Craig and Stark's voice, and I was like, oh no, do I not like this guy? And then I realized, one, I was like, man, he sounds just like the Starks from Game of Thrones. Actually, he did a really nice job. And it wasn't that. It was it's like, no, there's no space in the audio. Very, very strange. And it's only that scene. The rest of the episode, totally fine. You can hear stuff crackling, you hear people rummaging in the background. I don't know what happened to it, but I actually agree with you. I thought the audio was a little weird up on the wall. With that said, though, one of the things that me and you also talked about, we said, we're going to see the wall. And we made a big point. We said the Night's Watch should be held in a different regard in this time period.
We
get immediately Starks being sent up.
That was a big deal too, right? Because, you know, we know that they've manned the wall and stuff like that. You know, that's one of the big theories about Benjen, right? Is, you know, did Benjen have to go to the wall because, you know, he potentially knew the secret of Jon Snow and all this stuff. I mean, you know, because Benjen at one point was the only Stark in Winterfell holding it down, right? Yeah. And then he is the one who goes to the wall. So kind of interesting to see how that was a cool little add in there. And there were some other really cool, like if you really paid attention, there was a couple, I have some notes written down as well of things I heard, like Dalton Greyjoy's name was mentioned, who is a big player in this. So there's, you know, and he's carrying, and Craegan Stark's carrying around ice, the Valyrian steel sword, you know, doesn't come in sheath, but you can see it. So there was definitely some small stuff. I'll probably rewatch this episode this week before we do our follow-up Friday episode, which, by the way, again, just want to plug real quick. You guys want to send us your thoughts, theories, what you liked, what you didn't like. We will try to get through as many of those as we can. Send them to us before Wednesday. That's kind of when we record it. It gets posted on Friday, so we can get your guys' thoughts on the episode as well. So, yeah. So I will say that's really like my one nitpick. I have another one, which we're not going to touch until the very end. But other than that, yeah, man, I thought this episode, just to kind of give it a overview, I'd say 4 out of 5 stars. What would you say, Jimmy, before we dive further into the details here, would you say is your like initial ranking review?
4 out of 5. There's going to be real quick about the Winterfell thing. One thing that was missing was Sarah Snow. I think that's a perfectly okay thing to cut. I don't think that it's necessarily a bad cut. I think Sarah Snow not being included in the show is actually fine. But 4 out of 5. One thing that I'm going to get out ahead of, because I'm not looked at really anyone else's reactions. I'm really not. I'm trying not to like search the internet for what people think. I'm trying to just go with my own things here. But I'm curious to see what people think of the pacing of the episode, because this is way more in line with early seasons of Game of Thrones. A lot of dialogue happening, a lot of hushed conversations, a lot of silent, you know, face acting, which Emma Darcy destroyed this episode with. I mean, just phenomenal grief on her face. Maybe that, you know, we saw critics saying that they thought that her performance or Emma Darcy's performance is like the best they've seen in Westeros. And I'll tell you what, we're off to a good start because Emma Darcy nailed it this episode. I actually really love the pacing. I like a little bit of quieter
episodes. I agree.
I really am super glad. I think last season was a little weird because we had the time jumps and stuff, but a lot of stuff happened last season to set all this up and to be back into, you know, a more steady, methodical pace for me is the kind of television that I like to see. So I was really excited about that. There are some things that, you know, the audio thing was definitely one of those things. And then we'll, of course, talk about the conclusion of the episode and talk about pros and cons and how we view that as book readers versus non-book readers. But the dragon stuff was great. I mean, some of the shots were just iconic. Whenever mm-hmm. we see Rhaenys come back in from flying. Oh, dude, that shot was so good. It was so, so, so good. And I always forget just how much I love this world. You know, there's a limit on what they can do in a TV adaptation for the settings that George has crafted, but they have done such a stellar job for an adaptation of the locations that I just think are marvelous. One of the things about this episode that I love the most, and we got to jump out ahead of it right now, because it's another thing that me and you said that they would probably do. Matt, they fixed Missaria's accent.
Oh yeah, that's in my notes here. I said, yeah, Missaria still has an accent, but not nearly as bad, toned down a bit. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that
way
was
way better.
Yeah, way better. That was huge. Her, and I'm glad. Clearly, they must have like seen fan backlash because the accent. It's not that the accent is bad. Mm-hmm. It's that it was obviously sort of overdone
and very slow. She would talk like
it was a lot. It was pretty obvious that it was like too much, like mm-hmm. you could tell it was. And so I'm glad they toned it back. Now it feels like natural. It doesn't feel
it's
like
so much better.
Right, like, because it's already nice. Because it's already no, it's not like Game of Thrones where we're in like Essos and you know dealing with the Dothraki and like all kinds of people with all kinds of accents. So hers in general feels kind of out of place because everybody just has sort of a normal accent.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, last season hers felt even more ridiculous because it was so much. There's just so much more to it. Yeah. So yeah, I agree. The cinematography in this was amazing. The scene where they're doing Luke's funeral and Allison is lighting the candles.
Yeah,
and going through and even lights one for Luke, just the back and forth, and again, you know, Robin Giraldi just knocking everything out of the park once again. so good. Yeah, so all right, let's go a little bit down here. I'm just gonna read my notes and then we can kind of just go however we want, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so some of the yeah, there's a lot in this episode, and I will agree with you on the pacing. It felt fast, but it didn't feel like too fast. It felt like
I thought it was a good slow burn. Yeah,
I don't even think. See, I wouldn't even use the word slow burn because I felt there was a ton of stuff happening in this episode. I felt like the tension was there, and I don't know. I thought it was great. I would not use the word slow burn for this because I felt like the pacing was fast enough, even though it's not a lot of action
I
to
agree.
Keep like the build and suspense moving at a steady flow. So I just want to read some of my notes here. Yeah. What a shot of Storm's End. Just so cool. Like you said, getting a little bit of that world building. Gotta see we gotta see Winterfell and Storm's End and you know King's Landing. There was a lot in this episode. Some characters got barely any screen time, like Corlys Velaryon, just kind of I think as a season two refresher, and a lot of people are probably watching this for the first time, so mm-hmm. it did feel like let's give every main character a shot. Everybody gets a piece of this, gets a piece of the puzzle. Even Viserys a little bit, right, with his statue. Even Viserys got a piece of the puzzle to kind of remind us and refresh us. Okay, and I think
a direct comparison to who's on the throne now, by the way, who's drunk.
Yeah, exactly. So, just some other things here. Things that caught me off guard. Well, then, Crispin, Cole, and Allison. I wasn't expecting them to go as crazy into that. I thought they were going to leave it more ambiguous. They went into it more than once. And my question is, does Laris know?
Oh, he clearly knows. He said, I heard you were incapacitated, my lady.
Does Kristen know that Laris
is getting with the feet picks? I don't think
I don't think so, because I think Kristen would go kill Laris.
Yeah, I think that Crispy Cole's not going to take that well. And I think Laris is being possessive, because as you see now, Laris is starting to kind of put his words into Aegon's ear. And then, you know, obviously he went to her and said, I heard you were incapacitated. And she's like, you know, you can tell she knows he cannot find out. But if he knows, he has to know.
He has to know. I do like how they hinted a lot at blood and cheese in this episode. So we'll get to blood and cheese. I saw this guy with the box. I'm like, that's the rat catcher. That's one of them. Mm-hmm. It's like very quickly. And then I said, man, I think they're doing a good buildup for it, trying to get us happy to see the kid. I was like, because he's playing piggyback, right? And I was like, mm-hmm. I think this is a good buildup for this finale. And I'm actually looking on Twitter right now, and some people seem to be like, it's crazier than they thought. So there is some shock out there. I think some of the diehard book people are the people which are pretty critical of it, saying it's not nearly as crazy as they thought. And we'll save that. We'll still come to that, because that's the sort of the big thing of this episode. Let's see. Laris killed the staff. Allison doesn't seem as shocked by that. Just okay. I think it's beginning to, the stage is beginning to set for her. I thought she was great in this episode, by the way, Allison. Mm-hmm. I just, her progression throughout the episode, a lot is changing. And I think she did like a very good job reflecting on that. Mm-hmm. She's on edge. Damon is just unhinged. He's bloodthirsty, and it's showing. We see Otto and Allison going at it. I like how they also tried to make Aegon seem likable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I actually laughed.
That's a good dynamic to make Aegon seem unlikable. Gives him a little bit of tension with Otto. Also continues the, maybe the greens aren't as bad as we think they are. You know, the blacks and the greens, we still want to, they think they still are trying to build this thing up of like, there's reasons to choose both sides. I liked how they called Damon Lord Commander of the City Watch. And then with blood and cheese, it was about finding Aemond, not going and killing one of the kids, which is not really how the books leave it open. The books make it seem like Damon was like, I want you to go kill one of Aegon's kids.
Yeah, I mean, he gives him the out, because he's like, well, what if we don't find him? And then Matt Smith kind of looks at him, and then we cut away. So like, obviously more conversation was had. So we're supposed to put that. The few things I've seen, I actually saw people already confused by that. Be like, he told me to go Aemond. How does he end up killing it? And I'm like, oh no, they didn't understand the cutaway. That's not cool.
But I think it's cool, because it's a cool way to leave it ambiguous, but also it kind of fills in the book readers like us, because, you know, one of the things we've been talking about this show is the way they play with the little information we have from the books.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. You know, yeah. I mean, the books, you know, it says like Damon's wife was killed just in horseback riding. Mm-hmm. Well, they played with that a little bit further in the show. Right. And so they sort of playing with it here, too, I thought was kind of a cool way to do it. So other than that, yeah, then the guy kicked the dog, and I was like, all right.
I think that was more egregious than blood and cheese, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and then I was like, man, they're really setting the mood with the rain. It kicks in, the fire. Okay, it's out of control. I can see where this is going. And then, yeah, blood and cheese, I'm going to say, what? I feel kind of let down, man.
Can I respond to the other stuff you talked about first before we dive in?
Yeah, let's. But other than that, I still love the episode. 4 out of 5.
Okay, all right. So I'll just respond to some of the things you said. So like Aegon, I thought his performance was fantastic. I think showing one that he's like clearly not in the know when it comes to being a ruler, but also doing common sense things like being nice to the small folk and being like, oh, you need your goats or sheep or whatever, we'll get them back to you. And then Otto comes over, well, sir, we can't do this. And then you could see Aegon's like, oh, that sucks, bro. And it's because he has no interest and no, you know what I'm saying? Like he does not care. about the politics of it. So I think that this is actually a pretty cool dynamic that they're putting with Aegon, because it makes us feel a little bit conflicted. He's actually trying to do some things that I would be like, hey, that's pretty good, and being instructed not to. And then obviously he's completely incompetent. I mean, talking about being drunk with his friends on there on the throne. Then we get the picture of, you know, Viserys' statue. I thought Aegon was a bright spot in this episode for his performance. One of the things that I did not like before, you know, we get to the ending here, and I don't know how you felt about this, but I thought the lack of an Aemon fallout with his mother and Otto was a miss. I think that's a big miss for Aemon's character. We see Aemon kind of still talking about vengeance. I understand he's a sociopath, right? Like, he's the Daemon on this side or whatever, but I don't know. He clearly had regret in that moment, and then we come back and it's like they already know, which is fine. Like, I could get by that, but I just felt like Aemon's reactions this early since it happened didn't line up with where we left off in season one very much. And Aemon's actor, whoever he is amazing. And I just think that getting his scene with Otto and Alicent and the fallout of that was really important for Aemon's character and setting the stage for what's about to happen and how serious this is. And I think that they really should have included that. And I'm curious if that will be a deleted scene, like an extra scene maybe that we see down the line. So that was really, you know, the audio of this. And then we'll talk about, I guess we can go ahead and talk about Blood and Cheese. We can talk about I wanted to get those things out first. Because
yeah, for sure. And we'll dive back into everything else. But I think that was sort of, that was the thing that was teased about this episode. You did it on Father's Day, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even George R. Martin said it was one of the, it's dark and brutal even for him. And I think we've been hyping it up because I've talked about the way I think I would do it. And the way that you and I have talked about, like, this is how we think we'd do it, was like a way that was still less, it was way more crazy than the way they showed it, but not as, and it was kind of weird too, because it felt awkward in that she's like, then she runs to Alicent and she's like, they killed the boy, almost as if like they knew it was going to happen.
Well, I thought it was her just being in shock and calling him a boy that removes him from being like, she like, not my
son. I know. I think so too, but I don't know. It's kind of awkward. I didn't like it. I did not like blood and cheese.
So as a book reader, I think that this is nowhere near as good as the book. So in that regard, I'm very disappointed. Our initial reaction, by the way, 2 years ago was Blood and Cheese will not be shown on screen. Me and you said that. We said there's no way you can show that on television. Turns out we were right.
Yeah. I still think though, because like in the books, they're having dinner and it's almost like the way it's described and feel like is they like kind of come up with the shadows. They've each got one of the kids and it's like, which one are,
I thought it was, they visit Alice. I read it today.
No, I believe they said they're having dinner.
I thought it was like after dinner or something. Cause they always go to hang out with Allison. Allison's supposed to be in the room. She's gagged.
She might be gagging.
Yeah.
She wasn't in that scene, but
shortly after. So in the books, it is, right. Regardless, it's far better. I even thought about the way that they entered. Now, maybe they wanted to show the traverse through the castle's fine.
That was kind of cool. I
thought it was going to come through like a secret door or something like that. I know that could seem convenient, but the books make it seem that way. Like you said, coming from the shadows, killing the maid immediately.
And it's like, what passageways do you know? Because he's a rat catcher. He clearly could just take the normal route. Like, as he walks through the...
Yeah, the entire idea is that he's thinking Maegor's passages.
Yeah, he walks through the throne room with the guards around him, and it's just like, oh, I'm the rat catcher. And like, nobody bats an eye. So it's like, why did we need to take these? Like,
no royal guard at the door during a time of civil war breaking out. It's kind of an oversight as well.
Yeah. I mean, again, I still liked the episode, but
if you don't know what happens in the book, it's not that bad. It's pretty good.
It's just weird because I honestly never felt, I honestly never even felt like disappointed with a scene in Game of Thrones until the first scene I ever felt like disappointed was in season seven. Yeah, like season seven when Arya and Sansa are at like Winterfell with Baelish, and it kind of like that whole plot line, they just didn't know what to do with them. And mm-hmm. like that was like the first time. And so that was all the way in season 7. I mean, technically we're halfway through House of the Dragon now by being in season 2.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But yeah, so I'm just like, huh. I mean, I still like the episode.
It did not hit like,
and I'm sure the rest of the season is going to be fine. I think it's a miss. I'm just being honest, because it's like Father's Day. Twitter could be, if they had gone a little more intense with it, because it almost felt like she didn't really have the weight of choosing. Because a big deal in the books is that both of the kids are like there and awake, and she chooses, and they take the other one.
No, letting the kid know that their mom picked him to die. But
yeah, and so the whole deal is like both kids are very aware of what's happening, and
yeah,
and it's, and so like she chooses and they say no, and then they do the other one, and this one she points and they're like, no, that's the right one, and then they kill him. So yeah. It didn't, like, even that didn't have the same feel to it. Plus they're like sleeping. Yeah, I didn't like it.
They toned it down. So I think without any expectation of watching it, I think it's fine. I actually think yeah. it's plenty. Kelsey, my wife, has never read the books, and she was mortified. She's like, is that the sound of them sawing off his head? And I was like,
yeah, yes. See, I told Teresa what was going to happen because she wanted to know, because she was like, I was like, I think there's going to be something, because she, like, there's like a lot of scenes in Game of Thrones where like she just doesn't do well with that kind of TV. So I was like, you're going to need to skip this scene and this scene and this scene. And I was like, you might want to skip this scene tonight, because I think it's going to be like really bad. And she's like, well, okay. We watched it, and she was kind of like, eh. I mean, but she like had only known about like what happens like an hour prior.
Yeah. I mean, I still think as just a show only scene, it's totally fine. Gets a point across.
It's totally not the end of the, it's totally not like the end of the world or anything.
But compared to the books, it's way worse than the books. I mean, the idea that you
yeah, way worse in like it's crazy way, like not like it sucks in the books.
Yeah. I'm saying it's way more brutal in the books. But also, sure. I think the drama of the book and the tension of the books is way better. Just with, like you said, having the two boys there, and then her picking the youngest one because she thinks he won't know what's happening, even though he is old enough to realize it, and then killing the heir to the throne, Jaehaerys, which is a big deal. And then looking at the 2-year-old boy, and she says, your mom wanted to kill you. What do you think of that? You know, and then that is horrible, right?
Yeah.
Now cheese, I think it's cheese, or maybe it's blood. One of the two are supposed to be caught with the head leaving at the gate, by the way. So we'll see if that happens, if in the next episode or whatever. But without a doubt, I mean, for how much we've been hyping and we've been saying this is going to be like a Westeros TV moment, I'll be honest, I don't think it's in the top 20.
No, I mean, even George Martin and the cast all hyped it up. I mean, they like Olivia Cooke and everybody was like, it's like Red Wedding-esque.
It's not. I mean, it should have been.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's out of the whole deal, it's one moment that we thought was going to be super epic.
Our guts were right 2 years ago
when they wouldn't show it.
We said we thought there'd be shadows on the wall and maybe a blood hitting and screaming.
Yeah, I sort of thought what they were going to do is you'd like, because I the way it's kind of described in the book is like they're at a dinner table, right? And because even the imagery we see, right? There's that like that shot in House in Fire and Blood, like one of the animated panels, and the way I was thinking of is that they would honestly just show Helena's face as they killed the other kid, and then it would be like, oh my god, they killed the other one, right? And so I thought that was going to be the way they do it, but I mean, it's still like a.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free to play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free to play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
again, you're still killing a kid, so obviously it's pretty dark, pretty brutal. So anyway, let's talk about some of the rest of the episode, because like I said, we did really, really like the rest of the episode. Go ahead. Somebody have one more point on it. Go ahead.
So I brought this up because I'm trying to remember where it happened. So it says, thanks to Cheese's knowledge of the Red Keep secrets, the duo was able to infiltrate the Red Keep through a forgotten passageway. Cheese then led Blood into the heart of the Red Keep, successfully avoiding the guards reaching the Tower of the Hand. They crept through the wall, slipping into the chambers of Allison Hightower. So it was supposed to happen in her bedroom.
Right.
Instead, they did it in Helena's bedroom. And then, so Allison's supposed to be in the room when this happens, by the way.
Yeah, because if you like, let me pull up some of the images here.
But also, Allison is supposed to bathe in the murderer's blood later, or his family's blood, or something, his mom and father's blood.
Yeah, because even some of the official artwork, and again, you know, the show, you can do different things, you can play with whatever you want. Like this is the picture from Fire and Blood, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe I was thinking it's more sort of like
dinner-esque. Yeah, I mean, regardless, Allison was supposed to be there, right? Yeah, I mean, look how gory this is. This is crazy. I mean, that's a child. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
I literally don't think you could show that on television. Like, I don't think the FCC would let you do it in America. I don't know. A child? I don't think.
Dude. I don't know, man. I don't know. I generally don't know what the rules are. I would assume no, but who knows?
Yeah, it's just funny because our gut was right. And you know what? I guess we should say this: the revelation of this scene is as bad as the Red Wedding, right? Like the actual scene itself. Sure. Like if you think about what happened in that scene, like forget how it's executed, but I'm talking about like the implications and the events of this episode are horrendous. You know, I just feel like they really missed that. I don't even think they had to show it. That's my point. I think that they could have done Shadows on the Wall. I think they could have done more with it. And the drama of it is probably fine if you haven't read the books, but the drama in the book is just so much better with Helena having to make that choice. You know, I mean, it's evil. Like it's straight evil what they do. And here, the most evil thing this guy does that is on screen or whatever at this point is like kicking a dog. I don't know. I just, I'm kind of with you. You know, if I was a show only person, I probably wouldn't mind it as much depending on how hyped it was. But knowing what I know, I found Blood and Cheese to be disappointing.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at Twitter here. And of course, Twitter is what it is. So it just happens to be the thing. So, I mean, for starters, a lot of people, the only people who actually know it's referred to as Blood and Cheese are book readers because.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because they never even said, I think, either of their names in the show.
I don't know if they did. Yeah, I can't remember. Blood and Cheese is definitely like book lingo for sure.
For sure. But I'm actually shocked at how many more people are like, I think they liked it. Some people are making memes and everything. Like, I'm leaving here with something, you know,
my God.
So, like blood and cheese when they couldn't find something. And it's a clip of, Tenzo Washington. I don't know who he's talking to somebody, but it's like, yeah, I'm leaving here with something, you know? So anyway, So anyway, all right, let's dive into, to the rest of the episode. There really wasn't a lot of Rhaenyra, but what we did get of Rhaenyra was epic. I mean, just the emotion on her face. I think
Luke's like dragon wing was not in the books, and I'm glad they added it. Much better.
Yeah, I think House of the Dragon season one. You know, I don't know the rules of the Emmys, but I do know like you have to appear in so many episodes to even be like qualified for things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was one of the things that held season one back from like dominating the Emmys like Game of Thrones did. So because like the cast was so split, like, you know, you have to do so many episodes, like, you know, they weren't even in one of the episodes of the adult era because, you know, they did like a whole Blacks episode and a whole Greens episode, essentially. So, you know, maybe they didn't qualify for enough to even be like best supporting because of the way it works. I am going to be shocked, especially considering this year is actually kind of weak for dramas, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not like mega hits out there. Like,
it's not there anymore. Yeah.
Right. Like Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon season one had a lot of competition. Better Call Saul's final season. I mean, there was a lot of big shows that it was going up against. So I would be shocked, even just watching this, if they aren't going to just like go back to sweeping the Emmys. Based off this one episode, because the performances feel bigger and better.
They do. I think the acting is pretty stellar. I thought the writing of the episode, by the way, was also very good. I was kind of curious to see like how some of the conversations would be handled. And overall, I was very happy with them. Maybe we should really give some praise to the guy playing Otto Hightower, by the way. Just like with the little rift between him and Allison, and then he can't control Eamon, and you can feel him slipping. Like, he's a really talented actor. It's crazy he was in Little Nicky, by the way. He was the devil in Little Nicky, like the blonde brother. So weird. I thought that like you said, the performance and the quality of the episode is outrageous. I mean, it's so good.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the other cast too. I mean, really, when you kind of think about it, a lot of the younger cast, they were only in a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Because they had like a few different cast of care. I mean, Aegon, has been played by like four different people or three. Because there was the baby, and then there was the what's his name? David Tennant's son who played him.
Yeah.
When like they're at the dinner scene, or not the dinner scene, but the when they're at the when they're at the funeral, right? And he gets his eye cut. But I mean, so really, I think he only played Aegon for, was it two episodes?
It was at most
was
two.
It would have been the dinner. Yeah, it would have been the dinner, and then the episode where he gets crowned king. So this is only his third episode even playing the character. So some of those cast too, like they're now, you got to think about it, like now they're taking over these roles for the whole season. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different dynamic. And I do think it showed. I mean, not that the acting was bad or anything in season one, but with those time jumps and like some of the cast stayed, some of the cast moved now. You can just tell going into like the production and everything, this it shows in episode one that like the bar is now raised.
Plus, yeah, everyone's solidified, right? Like these are the people we're rocking with now, and we will be able to kind of grow attached to the performances behind the characters. I think that's probably why, like, for instance, like Otto Hightower feels so good, is because we're used to him at this point. Like when I think of Otto Hightower, I will now picture that actor. But overall, yeah, I think that Emmy sweeping is not, we got to see the rest of the season, obviously, but like very much a possibility, very, very much a possibility.
Yeah. And I think I want to say here, I think they kind of skipped something kind of cool. So when Jacaerys comes back and they're getting ready for the funeral scene, he says, "I've met with Craig and Stark." He also says he's visited the Vale.
And we'll never know what he had to do.
And for that. Yeah, so this is one thing I think kind of would have been maybe kind of cool to include. I understand maybe, of all the things you want to cut, because remember, this is a shorter season, but the episodes are longer, whatever. In the books, he goes and visits Lady Jane Arryn, right? And Mushroom, who is the court jester, who I kind of thought maybe we were going to see there as one of the people hanging out with.
Yeah, what the hell is Aegon up with this? We need Mushroom.
Yeah, so essentially he goes there and I think is essentially it's like what his cousin or his aunt is like, "Well, we're going to have to see what you got. And or if you want my support." and they cut that. So I was like, oh, that was a quick little thing.
I knew it was going to get cut, but I was curious to see if he went down on the Lady of the Veil, but apparently we will never know now. But she does.
The only thing we do know is that Kristen Cole was going down.
Yeah. So how do you feel about this? I don't mind this at all.
No, I don't mind it at all. I think it was suspect. No, I think everyone sort of knew it was happening. I do, and we will keep it spoiler free here, but I do think it will have some implications later. I think this is a good thing to expand upon to have some payoffs later.
Yes. And another thing that is, and again, spoiler free, but the small folk are being mentioned and featured in episodes still. Mm-hmm. That is very important. And Aegon tried to do the right thing. And then Otto Hightower was like, "Absolutely not. We're stealing all their sheeps."
Yeah. What about Hugh the Hammer?
Hugh the Hammer, dude.
Yeah, we got him. That was pretty
cool.
That
was cool. That was really awesome.
Yeah. Hey, we need, like, I thought it was kind of cool. Aegon's like, hey, all right, we'll give you your sheep back.
That's what I'm saying. Like I mean, he's
likable. And Otto's like, and did you see on the final one when he tells him, all right, we will give you the thing because we need it to win our war and your supporters, whatever. Otto's doing this like back and forth where he's like, okay, hold on. I got to walk back up the steps. And then he's walking back up the steps when he tells Hugh the Hammer that, well, I'm assuming that is, you know, who it's going to be. Cause he says, sir, you know, Hugh.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, if they expand his character to be what is in the books, they might not. It might be just been a small thing.
Yeah.
But then Otto's like, okay, all right, he's got it, and like turns back around and walks down the steps.
And he says, yeah, you know what? We'll pay you, and we'll pay you first, and we'll pay you well. And I'm like, man, Aegon's tax policy might be sick.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a good idea. I think showing him as like a loving dad was kind of a cool thing to do. Cause again, they were building it all up for Blood and Cheese. And you do still, because now we're seeing Alicent and even more like kind of being like, all right, we have an issue with Alicent and we already have a thing. You needed some of the reason to kind of support this side. So I think it was actually kind of interesting way to do it, because the whole time we've been like, Aegon sucks, right?
Yes, but also let's not forget.
But now giving us a little, yeah,
to everything is burn it with the dragon fire. So even though he is being cool to the small folk, he also is just saying, yeah, just use the nuclear bombs we have. Why wouldn't we use the nuclear bombs we have?
What's wrong with that?
You know what I mean? Yeah. What is wrong with? Yeah, you know what? You're right.
I mean, here's my question, Jimmy. It's okay when Daemon says that. But it's not okay when Aegon says that.
No, he's wrong as well. Did you feel like Daemon was a little bit of an in-between most of the episode? I mean, obviously Blood and Cheese is his device, and right. And by the way, makes total sense because he has friends in the Kingsguard. He spent a lot of time in Flea Bottom, so I thought that was, you know, that's in the book, and I thought that they did a nice job of kind of showing that. But I thought, for instance, like when Eric, whichever one it is. I always forget.
It is Aric. That's Sir Aric and Sir Aric. And Aric is with Rhaenyra and okay. Eric.
When he backmouthed Daemon, I'll be honest, in my head, for consistency with the character, I said he should drive a sword through this guy's chest. Like, that's what I thought, right? Like, this guy's talking back. You already think he's a traitor. And he's sticking up for a traitor. I don't, you know, they can't really, like, obviously they're not going to do that, but I don't know, for me, with Daemon, for how unhinged he is, I kind of expected him to retaliate and I won't hit him or something. And he did.
By the way, I had it wrong. It's the other way around. It is Eric. That is with Rhaenyra. Jeez, I messed up, pronounce
both of them Eric and just plead ignorance. it's easier that way.
Aric, who has an A, is with Alicent.
And Aegon. Aegon, Alicent, yes. Aric. There you go. And So I thought maybe he should have maybe snapped a little bit more. I'm very curious what they're going to do with Missaria. I'm very curious where this is going to go. Because I actually, for one, I don't exactly remember what happens in the books with her. So, which is probably a good thing because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. Probably gonna be like that Master of Secrets type thing for Rhaenyra, I think is probably most likely what's going to happen. But their relationship felt there's something still there. There's clearly emotions that are still behind that, those two. So who knows where that's going to go, especially with other characters we don't know if will be included in this show or not.
Okay, so I do have one question for you here, and I'm going to try and get this. I'm going to try and get it pulled up to see if they've already got the season two, episode one cast, which sometimes you can view it by episode on IMDb. It just may not be up yet. It's not Adam of Hull that Corlys Velaryon was talking to there, was it? Is that who they're going to go with?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So two things about this. One, I really like the fact that they showed that it affected him. Like,
Alan of Hull is who they're going with. But that's not Adam of Hull, but they might be changing it for the show.
I also was kind of curious about this. What do you think of this? Do you think that Corlys is going to end up having feelings for him?
Having feelings for him?
Uh-huh.
Like,
Because you remember his son, you know, and I'm just thinking like maybe Corliss is going to, I don't know. He just said, I'm indebted to you. And the way they looked at each other, I was like,
Well, no. So the theory is that Adam of Hull, so there is Alan and his brother, Adam.
Yes.
But the theory is that they're actually Corliss's kids.
Oh, that makes way more sense.
Yeah. Remember, because Adam of Hull is a dragon rider.
I forgot. I totally forgot. Okay. Yeah, okay.
I know they're small characters, but the theory on Adam of Hull, now that we have season one, remember, is that he may actually be God, now I'm blanking on his name. Oh, geez.
Laenor, right?
Laenor. Yeah, that he may be Laenor, since Laenor went over to Essos. Are they going to bring him back? Yeah. So that is the theory there. Yeah. So the theory on those characters is actually that they are. Yeah, because in the books, his mother, who's a character called Marilda of Hull, claims that he and his brother are fathered by Sir Laenor Valerian.
That would make sense of why he, like, I was just doing my duty, kind of like, you know, I did my duty. It's not because you're my dad and you won't recognize me. Okay.
Which doesn't even work because. No. So hold on a second. Hold on a second here. That would be, excuse me. Okay, let me read this because it's a little confusing. It's one of these things that's in Fire and Blood that's like two different ways by the Maester and everything. So Marilda of Hull claims that Adam and Alan are fathered by Sir Laenor Valerian, Corliss's son. Yeah.
Oh.
But clearly the age on it doesn't work for the show.
So the
Mushroom claims that they're fathered by Corliss Valerian.
So Mushroom's right in this regard.
Perhaps.
Mayhaps.
Yeah. Mayhaps. Yeah.
Seven Hells.
It's one of those things that like timelines in the books are so just vague, especially for this era. And the show obviously has to play around with some of those because so far, House of the Dragon is actually pretty book accurate, right? Even for stuff, I mean, obviously some of it is just you can play with because it's so just open-ended, but a lot of the stuff that is actually in the books, they are pretty accurate in terms of timelines.
Yeah, definitely. So I think this might be a case of Mushroom being right. Because there's obviously, in that scene, there's clearly...
There's a connection. Yeah
definitely.
Yeah.
By the way, I love Steve Toussaint. I think that's how you say his name.
So good.
Like, yeah, it's such so a small, good. Small scene. I thought he did a fabulous job. I was just memeing the entire episode. Like, I was just like, man, I
yeah, he had a very small role. He's going to have a bigger role, you know, going forward. Yeah. So I think it'll be more that he is actually Corliss Valerian's son. And that connection could be maybe a reason why he's like, seems to really like him and everything. And then he's like, oh, wait, who's your mom? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to build. I wonder if it'll have a bigger role to play like later down the line. Cause I don't remember anything from that storyline.
So Adam of Hull ends up becoming a dragon rider. This minor spoilers. I mean, you sort of saw this in season one where Damon's like, hey, we have a lot more dragons. Well, you're going to need people to ride them. So they have a moment that will actually be sort of the comedic moment in, you know, some way of House of the Dragon is when they just try grabbing like people on Dragonstone. Cause there's like so many Targaryen bastards and stuff. And they're just like, all right, well, let's just see who can ride a dragon. So people are just going to try and get like,
I think they have to,
but Adam of Hull ends up becoming one. So
yeah, I definitely hope that scene's in the show. I will be disappointed if not 0 out of 10, if it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So that's
get on this dragon.
Yeah. So that's one of the things of why people think Adam may be Laenor is because then he would still have like Valyrian and Targaryen blood, which would give him a reason to actually be someone who could ride the dragon.
Right. Okay. All right. Did you see the meme of Sopranos? A.T. They call it the Red Keep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Any other points here? Kind of got them, honestly.
I'm sure we've missed at least one thing from the episode.
Well, and we're gonna dive back more into this in Fallout Friday, you know, which we record on Wednesdays, by the way. But yeah, I mean, so I mean, I feel, I mean, I think generally, you know, just sort of looking at the rest of the season, I feel like we're in a good spot.
Oh yeah.
I feel very secure about House of the Dragon, like not being a flop, like season two, like some shows can't pull it off. And I think even just by this one episode, even though I wasn't super fond of Blood and Cheese, I mean, I do still think it was like, okay, it just wasn't obviously as cool as it was in the books, but I think it's clear even from this episode that the time skips are not going to be affecting it like they did season one. You know, I'm sure there were, I think if you look back, there were still like sort of some COVID restrictions that they ran into in season one. That's not here. Budget, everything, CG looks amazing. Zero issues with any of that. Set piece, everything. Cinematography, amazing. Like Westeros is back. Game of Thrones. Yeah. I mean, this felt like it was taken right out of season three, season four of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I liked the pace of the episode a lot. And you know, earlier I said slow burn. You said you wouldn't call it slow burn. So when I'm thinking that, I'm thinking more like we don't have a ton of action going on, which I'm down. I think that's good TV. We're switching areas and people and situations very quickly, and it doesn't make it feel slow. You know what I mean? Like you're trying to keep up with the Joneses, as it would be. So I think that this is a perfectly fine episode. I am disappointed by Blood and Cheese. I don't think it's anywhere near as brutal as I feel bad because I've hyped it up. You know, my friend Christian.
Me too.
I'm like, bro.
I know. Like, I have just wait. I have people too who I told, I was like, I think it's gonna be worse than the Red Wedding.
Yeah, and we were wrong.
Even,
we
you know, here I've even got another. Let me pull up another picture two of this, because this is. This is actually, and again, sort of another official photo. This is that one. This is from the, you know, in the DVDs and Blu-rays of Game of Thrones, they did like the histories of events, which are actually some of the coolest things. And it's all narrated by the cast, but it's narrated by them like in character. So it's like Jaime Lannister telling the story of this and stuff like that. Really cool. But I mean, here we go. This is like, oh, sorry. Let me get Jimmy in there too. This is like, you know, from that image talking about it, and there we go, there's both the kids, they're awake.
Yeah,
so clearly, I mean, this was like, you know, obviously I would imagine George R. R. Martin like okayed this or something, or somebody, you know, did for Game of Thrones. And yeah, just maybe they, I don't know, maybe they got a little gunshot.
I wonder if they ran into issues with HBO or Time Warner. They might have, just seems, somebody has, but, to give
well,
all this stuff,
well, I will say, remember, we are under a different leadership now than we were for most of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Game of Thrones was under, it would have been under what, Time Warner and then AT&T.
And now, I mean, it's a whole different executive branch at the, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, now we got to deal with, like, now we got to deal with Discovery and freaking.
Yeah, they didn't want to scare people off from Naked and Afraid season 18.
Jesus.
I kind of like that show.
By the way, did you see some more of the marketing they've been doing?
Oh, you mean like which franchises from, like,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
so they were doing that. So like Looney Tunes is Team Green, Batman was Team Black, obviously. Like Superman was Team Black, you know. And then the dragon, they put a dragon, like the banners around New York City was pretty cool. Imagine being somebody who's like, all right, I'm gonna go scale the Empire State Building to get this like inflatable dragon up here. How does that thing not, like, you know, blow away or however?
Yeah, I did think the dragon could have been better. I thought the drag, it was fine, but like they could have went a little harder, right?
How do they even imagine being the person who has to drag that thing up there? Like, Jesus.
Oh, I'm out. I hate heights. There's no way. I could never do it. I could never do it.
No way.
Yeah, I think
even when I'm in big buildings, like as soon as I get over like three stories, I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't like it.
I can't stand it. I am definitely of the opinion that we're off to a good start, though. Even with Blood and Cheese being a little bit disappointing for me, I still think that people who don't have those expectations or whatever are probably going to be fine. I'm very curious to see where they go from here. Aegon's going to be a different human being in the next episode, by the way. A very, very different human being. Could you understand what Helena was whispering to herself in that scene? I don't think it was meant to be audible, but I was just curious. Could you hear?
No, I couldn't, because I was watching something in the living room, like, you know, and so I was, there's some other sounds going on. And I was like, what? I couldn't, yeah. Couldn't quite make it out there.
But I couldn't hear it either. I usually have subtitles on, but I turned off subtitles so that nothing would come up first before blood and cheese.
For sure.
Yeah. And I could have left them on because the dialogue wasn't all that important, unfortunately. We're off to a hot start. So we're going to be
4 to 5 for me.
Yeah, 4 to 5. I think it's a solid episode. Everything up to blood and cheese, you know, delivered.
I still like this episode more than a couple episodes of season 1.
Season 1. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. You know, if we get 2 to 3 episodes that were as good as episodes 8 and 10 of season 1, I'll be thrilled. I'll be absolutely thrilled. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Yeah. So folks, we're going to do another episode by the end of the week. So by Wednesday, this Wednesday,
please,
we need you send in your thoughts about the episode. Or if you have questions, even, that's totally fine too. And
or leave a comment on YouTube, or
if you leave a comment on YouTube, it'll be read. Yeah. You can also message us, on, you know, whatever social media.
I actually, there are some people I haven't heard from a long time messaged me on Instagram today.
Wow. I'm excited. Good. I love that. It brings everybody back together to, mm-hmm. you know, watch a child be murdered. what a weird fandom we are a part of. So hit us up. Also, let us know if you have a ritual when you watch Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon. I'd love to know about it, because I always think that kind of stuff's funny. You know, I turn off certain lights. I don't know. I'm weird like that. I got little rituals for things that are important to me. So send us your thoughts, questions, feelings, feedback, all that stuff, so we can read it on our follow-up episode. I'll probably watch the episode again, and we will also probably go through, like, maybe what the ratings were, what people were thinking, and we'll also talk about the sneak peek for next episode.
Yes. Yes, yes. So awesome. With that, as always, and remember, guys, we are going to be doing some more like Patreon content, stuff like that. So stay tuned for that as well. I actually saw some new people hop in there today. So
awesome.
Anyway, as always, we want to thank you guys for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing House of the Dragon season 2, episode 2.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time, and remember, winter is coming.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.